Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before I launch today's exposition, I want to make our listening audience aware of some articles that I have written that you might be interested in and tell you how to access them. Over the years, I have done a good deal of writing to prepare resources that I think should be helpful. If you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, that's one word, jimandrewsbooks.com, you will find there a tab that says articles. If you will open that with your cursor, you will discover there are some articles that I've produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. I'm not a regular blogger, but when things pop up on my radar that I feel I would like to address in a thoughtful way, I will sometimes produce a longer article. So I'm just happy to share them with you for whatever benefit they may have. Now, back to our current study. We continue our exposition of the book of Revelation. We started in chapter 17 last time around. We pick up basically in verse 4. Let me just give you a little preamble and then we'll be moving forward. In the very end times, the prevalent world civilization will, I think, be a dominant religion, albeit false religion, that violently and vigorously imposes itself in the name of the health, wealth, peace, and prosperity of society in general. In case you've ever wondered how the scriptures teach us that Christ will make his surprise entry just when people all over the world are celebrating peace and safety in our time, this dominant religion will be idolatrous to the max, immoral and sensuous, loving luxury and power and oppressive in the case of those who love and obey the living God. The harlot here in the first several verses of Revelation 17 is Babylon the Great. Babylon the Great is a typology of ancient Babylon, one who sold herself to idolatry and immorality. That's what this demonically driven world is all about. But when God withdraws his common grace, his spirit from the scene, all hell will break out as never imagined. If you think that today our world is going to hell in a handbasket, we haven't seen anything yet. Just wait until Babylon the Great matures and breaks fully onto this global scene. So don't go to sleep, folks. Keep your clothes on, for the coming of the Lord is drawing every day nearer than when we believed. Now is the time to reset, not when all that is upon us. Let's read verses 3 and 4. Then the angel carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness. There I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, the same one in verses 1 and 2, that was covered with blasphemous names and had 7 heads and 10 horns. The beast, of course, is the Antichrist. The woman was dressed in purple and scarlet and was glittering with gold, precious stones, and pearls. She held a golden cup in her hand filled with abominable things and the filth of all of her adulteries. There's no mistaking who she is. The name written on her forehead was a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes. This is the ultimate Babylon, and all the abominations of the earth. I saw that the woman was drunk with the blood of God's holy people, the blood of those who bore testimony to Jesus. The kings of the earth who committed adultery with her, the world leaders, whatever their title may be, the shot callers in the world's political domain, the world, the great harlot, offered them what they wanted, and that was not God, the living and true God. Refusing to serve him, they were all allured by her beauty and luxury and her sensuousness, and they took to the great harlot's bed, Babylon the Great, the last great world civilization. This is the backstory of human history, if you want to know what has really been going on down through the centuries. The kings, the potentates of the earth, have spent themselves throughout history whoring around with such as the great harlot. Despite all the outward appearance of great gravity and personal dignity, basically their game is chasing the skirt of the great prostitute. The great prostitute, I've mentioned, is to be understood in spiritual, not literal terms. A great spiritual prostitute who is faithless to God or Creator and her true husband and sells herself to others. She is great in the sense that the elites of the world, the culture shapers, the opinion makers, are her loyal customers. She is Babylon the Great. She is the great mega epitome of ancient Babylon and all the cultures and empires since who have aped her godless ways. She is the world in capital letters. When it says the kings of earth committed adultery with her, that means the high and the mighty jumped in bed with her in exchange for her favors. But not just them. Down through history, her predecessors like Rome have attracted the man in the street, so to speak. Ordinary people drink up her charms like wine and were intoxicated by them. Drunk on her wine to the point of absolute moral senselessness, moral dissolution, and lacking any sense of right direction. Like drunken fools, people are regularly drawn away from God and their desires and caught up in the web of worldly pride with which she drew them into her arms. Well, verse 3, then the angel carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. There I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names. She had 7 heads and 10 horns. In the spirit means in a trance-like mental state, carried away into the wilderness. Some see this phrase as an allusion to the physical environment of ancient Babylon. That allusion seems pointless to me, unless it is just an allusion to the historical roots of Babylon in the desert. Sometimes the scriptures project the wilderness or desert as a place of dark danger and perilous aridness. This dwelling of the harlot, I think, is telling. It's the opposite of Edenic. Scarlet imparts a dignified image that disguises the pollutions of sin and corruption. The beast can be none other than the Antichrist. The beast is a veritable cauldron of blasphemy, as he appropriates to himself the dignity and the powers that belong to God in an effort to direct the worship and service from the living God, from the truth, to himself. In this way, he seeks to supplant the living and true God by depriving him of the worship of his creatures. Much in the same way as today in this secularized culture, the anti-God spirit of the scientific community tries constantly to enlist mankind to look to science, spell that with a capital S, to bring mankind all the benefit people for ages have been looking to God for, and offering science and its acolytes the praise that is supposed to be reserved for God. In that phenomenon today, we're just getting a little foretaste of the way the Antichrist will work the planet for his benefit. What we're seeing today is just a warm-up. Verse 4, the woman was dressed in purple and scarlet, the harlot, Babylon the Great, was glittering with gold, precious stones, and pearls. In his vision, John saw that she held a golden cup in her hand, filled with abominable things, and the filth of her adultery. Dressed in purple, dressed in scarlet, glittering with precious stones and pearls. A surfeit of luxury, things that appeal to the eye. A golden cup, symbolic of her enticements, that allure people to imbibe her abominable things, and of the filth of her adulterous concessions that draw people into moral confusion and impurity and draw them far, far away from the living and true God. You know something? I could make a pretty good case, given the time, that sex is one of the greatest drivers of human existence. You cannot believe how behind the headline makers of this earth we find sexual perverts and addicts. It's hard to believe how much that perversion dictates so much of what they think and what they do, from world leaders and in our country congressmen and congresswomen, to notable literary figures and philosophers, to the sports and entertainment world. Sex is a mighty engine that drives them. From idolatry, there always emerges immorality of every kind, always has, still does. Few people seem to understand what an engine sex is in the total scheme of things. That is nothing new. The difference is that in the very end, the harlot and hell will be, it appears, completely in charge. Except for persistent cells of believers, whom the harlot and the beast will not manage to fully exterminate, Satan and the beast and the false prophet, that unholy trinity, will seem to have won and to have the field to themselves. The name written on her forehead is a mystery. Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes, and the abominations of the earth. I saw the woman drunk on the blood of God's holy people, the blood of those who bore testimony to Jesus. In New Testament terminology, a mystery is a truth once hidden by God, now revealed to his people. What was hidden in his word, only hinted at in Genesis, is the spirit of Babel, coming to a head in the empire of ancient Babylon, now dead, but resurrected in mega form in the last great world empire, called Babylon the Great, with all of the evil characteristics in mega form. Now through the visions of John, the apostle and prophet of our Lord Jesus Christ, is a revealing to the church, which has eyes to see, ears to hear, and hearts to respond to this revelation, that Babylon the Great, foreshadowed in the ancient empire where Israel was oppressed and held captive for 70 years, is in the end times going to appear in a greatly enhanced form in its evil manifestations. Knowing that, folks, be prepared. Don't go to sleep like a frog in a tea kettle, as it were, as it slowly comes to boil and the frog does before it knows what's happening. If we can't stay morally awake in less challenging and tempting times, we will have no chance in the tribulation. This woman, this perennial anti-God whoring spirit that has always been active in the world, is to be manifested in the very end times in full and unmolested boil. The restrainer, the Holy Spirit, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, will be taken out of the way. Then the world, the harlot, the flesh, and the devil will break all boundaries of evil. In short, hell will break loose as never before. This civilization, Babylon the Great, is described as the mother or the wellspring or the headwater of harlotry or spiritual infidelity of every kind and of all the abominations of the earth. Even now she is hidden from the view of a blind and wicked world until, in the end, all is starkly manifest. Then, the lines between the works and the will of God and Satan will be sharply drawn, and human choices and their motives can no longer be fudged. This whore may be as alluring and as glamorous as a high-priced prostitute with the dress and bearing of a queen, but she is the gold standard for mean, and I do mean mean. I saw that woman was drunk with the blood of God's people, the blood of those who bore testimony to Jesus. When I saw her, John says, I was greatly astonished. Here's clear reference to the fact that the disciples of Jesus, steadfast witnesses in thick and thin, in bruises and in blood, will have endured martyrdom during the tribulation period. The church is, therefore, present during this time for the simple reason that all God's people constitute one flock. All are incorporated into the same vine. All are one spiritual temple or dwelling place of God. Verse 7, the angel said to me, "Why are you astonished? I will explain to you the mystery of the woman and the beast she rides, which has the 7 heads and the 10 horns." John is at first baffled by this symbolic revelation, but the revealing angel promises to expound the mystery. Why? Well, instead of the interpreting angel at first showing what John expected, the punishment of the great whore and the beast which she rides, what he sees seems more like a victory parade for the whore, the beast, and company. "Why are you astonished?" the angel asks. Why shouldn't the apostle be? Because the interpreting angel hastens to say, "I'm about to unwind this mystery for you. Be patient. You will see her punishment. The beast which you saw once was, now is not, and yet will come up out of the abyss and go to destruction. The inhabitants of the earth whose names have not been written in the book of life from the creation of the world will be astonished when they see the beast, because it once was, now is not, and yet will come." Here the interpreting angel begins to unpack the symbolism, which will give John better light and strike the chord of hope and triumph in suffering saints. Interpretively here, things get sticky. I will not bluff and try to tell you I have answers which I do not possess, which is the main reason I hesitated for so long to attempt an exposition of this book. Every sober interpreter, a lot or not sober, acknowledges that right here is where things get thick interpretively. So I, dear friends, will explain what I can, and I'll leave the rest to a time of better light. The beast, we already know, is the Antichrist. Here's the tricky part with respect to the beast or the Antichrist. They're one and the same. He once was, now is not, and yet will come up out of the abyss. Scholars and commentators have been all over the map on this one. Many have thought this reference was to the Roman Emperor Nero. There was a legend that Nero was supposed to have died back in 64 AD. But then he was supposed to have turned up in Parthia in Asia. Parthia was a famous contemporary eastern enemy of Rome. According to the legend, in cahoots with Parthian forces, Nero attempted a short-lived march against Rome, but promptly died before he could pull it off. Well, that interpretation has been discredited. Throw it out. Besides, were that the case, this interpretation could not be said by John to call for wisdom to understand it. By the time John wrote, near the end of the first century, the Nero legend was stale-dated by 30 years or so, so the shoe just does not fit. Nor can the beast be understood as ancient Rome. That's contrary to the majority of Revelation interpreters. Why do I say that? Because, folks, Rome existed at the time of John's vision, whereas the angel tells John, at the time of his vision and recording it, that the beast does not exist. So where does that leave us? This calls for wisdom. Spiritual wisdom, insight, and discernment that only born-again people possess. It implies, I suggest, that the most obvious interpretation is not the correct one. That is, Rome. It implies that it has a fulfillment beyond that and will not be deciphered by any except those who have eyes to see, ears to hear, and hearts to obey, meaning the saints. And perhaps only those believers who are on the scene in those very end times will be in position to decipher. We don't know, and we should be careful about over-speculating, lest we read something into the revelation of God that might inadvertently bring it into disrepute by people confusing their own misinterpretations with God's representations. I remember a pastor doing that once when I was in college. It wasn't the book of Revelation, but he read something in the book of Psalms, and he declared about 3 or 4 years before it happened that man would never be on the moon. Well, it was his blunder. It was his misinterpretation of the scriptures. It is one thing to say it could be this, or it might be that, but we must refrain from claptrap sensationalism that treats the book of Revelation like a Christian crystal ball. We must not be Christian astrologers. That stuff, I repeat, is reprehensible. Run from it. Here is another difficult imagery that is challenging to rightly interpret. The part about the seven heads and the seven hills. The woman sits upon the beast with the seven heads. We know who the woman is. The seven heads, the interpreting angel says, symbolically stand for seven hills. The seven hills are those hills upon which the woman, the great harlot, or Babylon the Great, sits. Now, mountains is the regular translation of the Greek word, orgos, not hills. A mountain is a frequent biblical symbol of a kingdom, and kings represent kingdoms and vice versa. Why is this translation, hills or mountains, an important distinction to acknowledge here? Well, if you translated hills instead of mountains, it favors the idea that hills has reference to the city of Rome, which famously occupied seven hills. Everybody knew that. It would suggest that Babylon the great harlot, was none other than ancient Rome, the city of John's day. But if we give that word, orgos, its more normal rendering, mountain, it does not fit, for Rome was not situated on seven mountains. More likely, the seven mountains are emblems of seven kingdoms, or kings. The seven heads may symbolize seven mountains, or kingdoms, that comprise the godless foundation of Babylon the Great, the mother of all harlots, the cultural foundations where she sits like a queen. Naturally, these seven heads, standing for seven kingdoms, are the historical influences that form the foundations of the godless civilization of the great prostitute. Looking in the rear view of human history, what empires might be in sight here? Taking our cues from the biblical record, those idolatrous and immoral and bloodthirsty foundations of Babylon the Great would be Egypt, Assyria, ancient Babylon, Media Persia, Greece, Rome. That's six. The seventh would be Babylon the Great, out of which the Antichrist would emerge as the eighth. That's a theory. But something like that theory appears to be what is in view. They are seven kings. Five have fallen. One is. The other is yet to come. But when he does come, he must remain for only a little while. The interpreting angel explains that those seven heads represent seven mountains, or kingdoms, as I understand it. Five of those rulers are deceased. The language fallen suggests overthrown at the time of John's writing. One of the seven kings or kingdoms is alive, as John writes. Would that be Rome? But it appears the beast is connected or grows out of those who have preceded him. What is very strange is that the beast appears to be someone who has been previously on the scene, but no longer is. Yet a person who will briefly reemerge from the pit of hell, the abyss, as an incarnation of Satan himself, full of all of Satan's foulness and wicked fury. Now, so far as I can see, given the language of Daniel and Revelation, referring to the same future developments, this reappearance of the beast, in imitation of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, does appear to me to be a God-allowed miracle that will deceive the nations, not the saints. Some understand this as an elaborate hoax, a fake miracle of some kind. However, I, and many others, believe the language suggests a literal resuscitation of some historical figure whose reappearance will stun and seduce the whole world into giving their allegiance to him. We could ask ourselves, now who might that be? But that would be an exercise in futility. We have been told what to look for. Some figure who was, did not exist when John wrote, but who will reappear from hell itself, all locked and loaded for unmitigated evil. When the time is upon them, as history takes shape, closer and closer to the end, the identity of that person, whoever that is, will become clear, so that those saints in that time, in that generation, will have wisdom and will not be deceived by this demonic supernaturalism. That is the grace of God. But whoever he is, his time to work Satan's evil purposes will be short. God will shortly send him to his everlasting destruction. The beast, who once was, now is not, is an eighth king. He belongs to the seventh and is going to his destruction. All of this is very difficult. The angel appears to be interpreting Daniel's visions, especially in chapters 7 and 8. It seems the beast or the Antichrist will emerge somehow from the seventh of the rulers. How? Well, it's far from clear. The ten horns you saw are ten kings, who have not yet received a kingdom, but who for 1 hour will receive authority as kings along with the beast. The ten horns represent ten kings different than the seven. By the political power of the Antichrist, he acquires, by virtue of his supernatural ascent from the pit or the abyss, counterfeiting the resurrection of Christ, he will have the clout to install 10 puppet kings or rulers as his surrogates. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We have to pick it up there next time. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.